This is a lively room.
Welcome.
She's coming. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness.
So thanks to you, now I know I have to go kiss fish instead of frogs.
Great.
a new life goal, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Got to stop the frogs, go for the fish.
That's right. There you go.
Evolution.
That's evolution. That's right. That's right.
Well, great job, guys. I mean,
great
acting. We were just talking to Michael Shannon, and he was saying that your performance was absolutely phenomenal, that you didn't even need the suit.
How sweet is that?
Because you did the job.
I would have trouble playing it without the suit. I'm not sure this sells fish guy.
So what was it like, I mean, in that suit? And
well, like it is in any prosthetic rubber suit and makeup, it's a little bit warmer than I want it to be. It's a little bit heavier than I want it to be. I can't see very well, can't hear very well. I'm kind of isolated, but isolation is kind of a theme of the movie. Mm-hmm. So channeling that into the character was actually almost helpful even in a way. He was probably the most beautiful, if you're talking about prosthetics and makeups and looks, probably the most beautiful creature I've ever been. And I, Abe Sapien was pretty in the Hellboy movies, and the Silver Surfer was awfully pretty, but this one was, and best ass I've ever had.
Mr. Jenkins, how about you working with...
My ass was... same one I always had.
Look good on screen, too.
What was the question?
About working opposite somebody in the
I didn't enjoy it. No. It was fun. It was great. It was nice to have a person there as opposed to a tennis ball on a stick. So it was great. I saw him at the camera test with his outfit on, and I thought, yeah, that's because I didn't know what he was going to look like. Just couldn't get it. I mean, The Creature from the Black Lagoon, I thought those big fish lips, I thought, that's not going to work. I can't do that. But he looked great. And it was, we had fun. We had a lot of fun.
I love your bathtub story, though.
That
impression made me laugh so much. I love it.
The first day I worked with him, he was in the bathtub, and I was talking to him and drawing, and I looked at him before he shot, and he was sitting there with a rubber suit on. Kind of like this. And I thought, Jesus, this movie doesn't have a chance. And he said action, and he changed a little bit. Just a little bit. I was like, oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, I can work with this.
Yeah.
But that was an impression when you read the script, too? Or just when you got
no.
it?
When I read the script, my impression was, how are you going to make this, how are you going to make an audience root for this? That's the trick here, and because he really made it an other, and this if an audience buys this, then they certainly should maybe inch a little closer to Love is Love, and you can't help who you love. Interesting. He did a lot of smart things in this. He made Sally not an unhappy person in her life. It's not like she had this hole in her life and was longing for something, and then she found this creature. No, she was happy in her life. She liked her musicals, she liked her shoes, she had her friends, and she saw this creature and fell in love, and which makes it even more interesting, as opposed to somebody who is, has a big hole in them and needs fulfilling.
She needs
fulfilling.
Saving. Yeah.
Yeah. And so. And the sex part of it, he as a character in the movie, me, actually see it happen and then accept it, which helps, I think, an audience go, oh, okay. He's just really smart. He's a smart guy. But even then, you just don't know if it's going to work until you see it before an audience. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What about playing a character that has no lines? Mm-hmm. It's all expression.
Right. Well, I've played nonverbal characters before, but they're often, a supporting character that's maybe scary, that comes in and growls and swipes at people down a hallway. This was different, because when Guillermo says you're the romantic leading male of the movie, and you don't utter one word, there's a challenge there, isn't there? But I'm having a background as a mime from my college days. I'm very much aware of how much communication happens nonverbally, how much visual communication we give to each other. And when her character was also mute, we had nothing but visuals and touch to communicate with each other. And what I love about the touch part of it, though, is that touch doesn't lie. You know, words can be manipulated and can be, you know, words can lie, but touch doesn't. When someone touches you, there's a genuine vibe you get from that. And so we did see like that. He hates me. Having the interactions that we do, both visually and face to face, when they get me out of the government test facility and into her bathtub in her apartment, and now we have intimate alone time together, all that leads up to, you know, the consummation of the relationship and the unfolding of whatever happens with the with the apparatus.
Was that in the bio?
My suit didn't actually do that, but it's implied. Yeah.
Well, Gamera's, or the other actor said that Gamera did a whole bio for all the characters. Did he do a bio for your character?
He said he did, but he never shared it fully with me. I guess because my character was so mysterious, he remained rather mysterious for me as well, and that was okay. That helped me actually find him in a way. Backstory being that I come from the Amazon somewhere, and the people who did see me or were aware of me there worshipped me as a god. Okay, so that's. That raises the question, is he? You know, throughout the entire film, you wonder, is it just an animal from the wild, or does he have some kind of godlike, you know, qualities? And why is he here? You know, was it by design that he found his way into this government test facility, or was he just captured like an animal in the wild? And that question hopefully is answered by the end of the film.
So in ancient times, there's this notion of putting a mask and, like, you get powers. Like, it was this thing about, like, you can hide yourself and you can be another person. Mm-hmm. When you put this prosthetic on, aside from being sweaty and hot and everything,
all those things.
Is there, like, a certain power that you feel that throughout Guillermo del Toro movies you've received or,
absolutely,
like, you've achieved?
Absolutely. The wide array of characters I've been able to play over the years because of the makeups and the you know, award-winning artists who have had their hands on my face, it goes far beyond what I could do with my own face, right? Mm-hmm. I have been blessed with a very wide-ranging career because of that. And each character that you put on, when you're in the creature shop and they're doing the test makeups on you and they're developing this character and it's going through changes and color changes and shape changes and placement of gills and things like this, I get to watch all this in a mirror as it's happening over months before we shoot. And that really does help inform who I am and it helps the process for me. And this fish character, when it was on and finished and I looked at myself from all angles, it's like, well, he's not ugly from any angle.
No.
He
was a handsome creature.
You're handsome.
I feel like a torero, you know, like that torero vibe, like that elegant torero, like standing and...
Well, and Guillermo, those are the notes that he gave me physically on this one. Aside from all of the actor, schmactor, heart and soul notes, the physical notes that he gave me, he said, were, I want you to channel the Silver Surfer, which I'd played in the Fantastic Four sequel, so I knew what he was talking about. That was a very heroic, stoic, quiet, strong character that I played, and very godlike. Mm-hmm. And he said, I want you to sprinkle some matador in there.
Exactly.
Some toreador.
Yeah.
So, and because that, as athletes go, they're the sexiest. You know?
Yeah.
and they lead with the pelvis and they face bulls with confidence, you know, and a sexy confidence. And so that's what he wanted me to bring to this character. Yeah.
Mr. Jenkins, Octavia Spencer mentioned that she has played many supporting roles, but in this movie she feels that her character, she has her own arc. I wonder if you feel the same thing with this character. And also, what do you think about the expression or the term character actor? Are you okay with that? Or?
Why? If I'm not, what's going to happen? If I'm okay, I'm an actor. It's like everybody plays characters. It's fine. This arc is a three-dimensional person. I start somewhere and I end up someplace else. I have my own life, my own dreams, my own worries. I don't want to get involved with this world and Eliza's quest. It's like, I don't want to talk about this anymore, he says to her. And then he changes. So, yeah, it was... Sometimes when you play supporting roles, it's you're just there to serve the story, and you have exposition, or you're just almost like a prop. And I did a lot of those when I was beginning, starting out, and they're just maddening to do. They're just no fun. So to read a part that is a human being, everybody is. Octavius, Michael Shannon's character, Michael Stuhlbarg's character, we all have our own lives, and that's very rare in a movie. You just don't see it that often. There's usually one or two that, you know, Sally is the one that is just, she's... And but no, Guillermo wrote, and I think that's what makes the movie really interesting, is that all of these people are human beings. They're not they're not plot devices.
Well, your character especially, it's so heartbreaking because you get rejected twice in the movie.
Every time I turn around, I'm getting rejected.
And you know, Octavia pointed out that all these characters are ostracized characters, especially in the 60s. I mean, it's so great to see that not just one person, but all these. This group of people, in each of their own way, are ostracized in that community.
And that's, I think it's just genius that he put in 62. I think that's really, that's when these people were really invisible. They were living in the shadows in that time. And, I mean, it really, I think it really helped the film, the fact that it was that period. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. And when I read the script, that was just, that's what really... impressed me with this script, was how all of these characters, he took the time to write people.
What about the fact that it was written almost as a musical, and that you had to learn to dance in a suit? How did that happen? Did you learn, did you take dance classes? I mean, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I was called in to start rehearsals about 3 weeks before filming started. So we were filmed in Toronto, so I had to fly up there and start a bit early. Sally had already been there earlier than me, learning American Sign Language and also learning. And she and Richard had to learn a little tap number together too, didn't you? So this movie had musical elements all through it, and even like their shared love for old musicals and what as they watch TV together. So when that fantasy number happened, where she goes off into this world of. That's the world she's been fantasizing about already, watching TV with her best friend across the hall. So, of course, she's trying to express her love for me, and what better way to do it than to fantasize about wearing a dance number together in one of those movies that she loved so much. So I cherish that scene in this movie because I grew up watching musicals with my parents and a love for Fred Astaire. Guillermo del Toro has actually called me the Fred Astaire of Monsters before, which is a great title, I'm so complimented by that. So to finally be in a dance number as a monster, forget about it. The day that we filmed that number, Guillermo held on to my wrist, and he had real live musicians. They were not background actors that were just faking it. They all were seasoned musicians. We had a 20-piece orchestra on set. A shiny floor with sparkly lights that were being reflected in the floor, just like a Fred Astaire Ginger Rogers movie. And so he wanted to hit the playback and have the musicians do their things, just so we could hear and sit and see what we were about to be dancing in. And so he's holding onto my arm, and he just starts laughing while the music's playing. And I look at him, and we're laughing. We're like, "Oh my gosh, we're really gonna do this!" And when that rehearsal of the music ended, Guillermo said to Sally and me, he said, "This is a once in a lifetime opportunity. You've been rehearsing, you know what you're doing, just have fun today because you may never get this chance again." Aww. Yeah.
How much water did you spend?
The scenes were a combination of both being in water and shooting dry for wet. So when you saw me in the lab facility, there were two places you saw me there. One was in a glass cylinder that was dry with some smoke in there and some lighting effect that made it look like water. And I also had to move slower like I was in water. I was on a teeter-totter as well. So all the weight support of my butt, and I was kind of belted into it, and I could lean forward, and I was rising and falling a little bit as it went to give the water effect. Then there was the pool of water that I had to dive into and come up out of with a chain around my neck to the wall. So that was real water, and when you're wearing a foam latex rubber suit, it is a sponge. It sucked it in, and I became, I was a very heavy boy those days, And then the other scenes, the bathroom scene, where she stuffs towels under the door and it fills up with water. That was an 8-foot high tank that the bathroom set was built in. And we actually flooded it, and we actually had to hold our breath and go under and film those scenes. Yes. Loved it. Loved it. It was great fun. Terrifying, but something different. And then a big wide shot, the poster of the movie where the two of us are floating in a lovely embrace. That was on a dry soundstage with us suspended from hip harnesses and wires to the ceiling, also bobbing up and down slightly as we. It took a village to make this happen. You know, smoke effect in the room and some lighting effect, so he got the ripple effect of light coming through waves. And then some after effects later. He also had a fan blowing on Sally so that her coat would blow and her hair would blow to give that watery, floaty effect. And then some digital enhancements in post-production, and you've got us underwater.
Yeah. Doesn't sound very romantic, though.
But no, it was. when you put a skinny, bony pelvis like mine in a hip harness all day, it gets painful. Yeah.
So it took a lot of acting that day, right?
It did indeed, yeah.
Mr. Jones, I want to have your take regarding the whole motion capture acting debate. Some people say that, you know what, motion capture or performance capture is not that different from what you do, for example, with having the suit or the makeup or everything, and then when it comes to award season, should we divide the kind of recognition, the categories between regular acting and something that is closer to what you do, or performance capture? How do you
I'm just a firm believer that acting is acting, and if I'm given a character to play, I play that character, whether it's wearing a t-shirt and jeans or whether it's wearing a monster suit. I met Andy Serkis at Comic-Con a few years ago, and first time we'd actually met in person. We'd been asked about each other for years, you know, because our careers seemed to be semi-similar. However, we agreed that day that we do the same style of acting, only my makeup goes on before the movie and shoots, and his goes on after, right? So it's acting is acting. Finding a character is finding a character and playing that character. So should there be a separate category, maybe? I don't know. I don't know. I would love to. I would just love to know that our efforts are recognized somehow. Anyway, whatever form that comes in would be great.
And for you, Mr. Jenkins, sorry, award season is approaching. Do you enjoy that whole thing, or?
He's been there before, you know.
I don't. I hope this movie is recognized. I do. I think Guillermo deserves a lot of recognition for this film. You know, but there's nothing you can do about anything. It's just, you know, I've learned a long time ago making movies, when you think, oh, this is going to be great, then it's like, oh, no. I mean, it's not something that you try not to think about things like that. You just go ahead and live your life. But I do hope the film is really recognized for his sake.
Mm-hmm. You worked with Guillermo before.
Yes, many times.
It just dawned on me.
Yeah. This is my sixth feature film with him, and I was also a recurring character on his TV show, The Strain.
Of course.
So I've seven projects, and over those seven projects, I played 12 characters for him, because he's had me do multiple duty in a few things. Yeah.
And what do you take of this monster? I mean, you've been a monster for him for so long. What's this monster for you?
Being that this was the romantic leading male of the movie, it changed everything for me. And also, it seems like this movie in general was more personal for Guillermo. He had more writing on it in his heart than anything I've seen that we've done together before. Mm-hmm. A filmmaker in Mexico that was his mentor, and I forget the man's name, so you'll have to, if you talk to Guillermo, ask him about this. But he said that after watching The Shape of Water, this mentor said to him, Guillermo, you finally exhaled. All the other movies you made up to this point have been an inhale to gather yourself, to you're making art all along, but this time you're letting it all come back out again, and this is all your career has built up to this movie.
Yeah.
So I felt that very much while we were filming it. Yeah.
Do you feel similarities between the story and Pan's Labyrinth? Because at first it kind of is, oh, there are two fables.
Mm-hmm. And his running theme of the underdog and the underdog finding a voice and finding finding some triumph over and bucking authority, another theme that seems very, very similar, where when authority is getting it wrong or when authority is abusing its power, it's okay for the little guy, for the little woman, the invisible characters, the voiceless, to maybe break the rules and find a way around that authority to find triumph and completion.
Mr. Jenkins, I have cats.
How do they taste?
And I question your character's love for cats, because does your character really love cats, or they are just there? Or?
Yeah, I think I do. It's, but you know, it is a strange relationship with the cats. But you could had to make a movie about mourning the cats. I mean, it's like what do you do? That's an interesting question you just gave.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
It's very interesting. I hate cats.
There it is. Jenkins is over. We got the headline.
Actually, I had a cat, and I love the cat. But it's the how do you play this? How do you? What's most important? I mean, at the time when he's eating, it's like no, and then he's a creature. What are you going to do? You know, it's not his fault.
That's one of my favorite moments for your character watching you in this movie was that moment where you,
it's like,
forgive me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, no, really.
And then the whole thing is like, I mean, is he a god? He ate a cat, so I don't know. So cats play a huge part in this film. That's the angle I take.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Do you guys have a picture?